I'd like now to welcome to the program Janet Oliver. She is Regents Professor of Pathology at the University of New Mexico. She's the director of two interdisciplinary research centers, which are sponsors for the upcoming event, The Art of Systems Biology and Nanoscience. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
So the title, The Art of Systems Biology and Nanoscience, first of all, what is nanoscience?
Well, it's really understanding the properties of materials at the nanoscale. It's sort of the science of the teeny tiny. We know that properties of materials change when they get extremely small, and it's the study of those properties. And also, it's also the study of what you can do with nanomaterials, what kind of systems you can build with them.
When you say nanomaterials, are you talking about specifically the materials that are found within biological systems like cells and so on?
Well, most of the molecules that make up cells are nanoscale, but usually when we talk about nanotechnology in the context of biology, we're thinking of materials that have both physical material properties and biological properties. And so a lot of the work that we do is with nanoparticles, very tiny particles that, for example, can be loaded with anti-cancer drugs and then can be coated with proteins that will direct them to particular tumor targets, for example, so that they can be put into animals and hopefully people and go directly to a particular target and release a load. So it's sort of an integration of, you know, physically hard materials and biological materials.
Is the main application that you're working with diagnosing and treating disease?
Some of it is. We have active teams that are working directly on that, and there'll be a lot of talk about that at the Saturday afternoon lecture by Dr. Peter Grzynski from the National Cancer Institute. But we're also using these nanomaterials to really probe molecular properties of cells and so much more basic science as well. We do a lot of work with, for example, with fluorescent quantum dots for looking at single molecule interactions on cell surfaces. And one of the things that kind of motivated the art show is that we spent a lot of time looking at movies of little red, little blue balls bouncing around on green cells. And not only are they informative, but they're really beautiful. So we realize that we're making art as we do science.
As I was poking around the website and the various sites associated with this upcoming event and nanotechnology, there was this video of the representation of a cell, and the cell represented from the outside, and then you peel off the outer layer, and there are these little organelles, and then the mitochondria and the nucleus and all these things that we learned in seventh grade biology or whatever. But when they're represented in this way, they become so fascinating and so kind of beautiful, and they seem sort of weirdly familiar, even though they're so small that none of us have ever seen them without a microscope.
Oh, well, I like that they seem familiar, and that really is why we think the art show is a good way to reach out, because the art show is really an outreach event for the public to sort of share the kind of science we do. Some of the science we share is just exactly what we see down a microscope. Hasn't been in any way manipulated, but it's just, you know, not only informative, but remarkably gorgeous at times. Some of it is what scientists have to do to create images of molecules. I mean, we can't yet look at molecules directly, so we tend to get structures by doing X-ray crystallography, for example. You end up with a whole bunch of funny little points, which then you can computationally work with to resolve them into a molecular structure. And then you can use computer programs to make those into 3D molecules and rotate them and look at how they might interact with other molecules. And at the same time as you're learning about their structure and, for example, how drugs might interact with them and how you might design better drugs, you're just struck by how really beautiful they are.
It is a funny thing, and I found myself wondering whether the elements of life are just naturally beautiful to us because they are what compose us. I mean, we find them beautiful because it's almost like narcissistic. This is who we are. This is what we're made of.
Well, I don't know if that's why they seem beautiful, but I think it's sort of a lot of what can draw people to science. And, you know, in this culture where there's sort of, you know, there are pockets of aversion to science, we think maybe this is a way to really turn things around. We have a couple of evening programs where we mostly focused on art and focused on adults, but we have an all-day kids program, just hands-on nanoscience. And it's really just to try and show them some of these compelling things that we have that might hopefully will make them want to learn more.
So for the general public, it's a beautiful thing because we get to see things at this nano scale that we would never be able to see otherwise, and understand. I mean, explain. You know, you guys presumably explain to us to some extent what these things are. There's also a piece of it that I think is not necessarily in this show, but the visualization piece for scientists themselves. My understanding is it's very important for you research scientists to be able to visualize what you're doing, what the ideas are, to put them in a visual context to understand them better. Is that true?
That's absolutely true. And that's really the power of interacting with people like, well, we had our artist in residence this year is Graham Johnson. He's this wonderful young artist who's actually just got his PhD from Scripps in molecular graphics. And he's been able to work directly with lab scientists to take and computational scientists to sort of show how once you know a particular he's actually particularly famous for these iconic images of molecular motors walking on a particular structure called a microtubule, and it's really how things move, for example, in neurons. And we had the molecular structures of the microtubules and of these motor proteins. And we had some image in our head of perhaps how they might interact, but he was able to, you know, take these two separate scientific images from high-powered imaging and crystallography and put them together and make them move. And suddenly we had this sense of really having an understanding of how things might move in the brain that we didn't have before with our sort of static thoughts and crystallized structures. So we do learn a lot of new science this way.
We're talking to Professor of Pathology at UNM, Dr. Janet Oliver, about the art of systems biology and nanoscience. So let's go back to the disease and, for example, the cancer model, the idea of carrying around drugs on tiny nanoparticles so that they can target cancer cells in a very specific way and not have to do this horrible chemotherapy thing where all your hair falls out and all these other healthy cells die. That technology sounds so promising and so fascinating. At what stage is it? Is it just an idea? Is it being tested? Where are you?
Well, it's well beyond just an idea, but I don't think you're going to go and have human cancer treated with nanotechnology quite yet. But I think we're getting pretty close. For example, one of the main teams at UNM and Sandia, it's a joint team of New Mexico University and Sandia National Lab scientists, are making nanoparticles that are silica-based, which is one of the important things. A lot of nanoparticles are made of metals, which actually are poisonous. So they're very interesting for studying material science, but you can't put them into people. So these new nanoparticles are, you know, they're made of sand, silica. And they're highly porous so that they can absorb huge amounts of drug. And they can be coated they have a lipid coat so that nothing comes out until you say it should come out. And then they get targeting molecules on them. And those have gone through proof of principle in laboratory, just cell studies. They're in active animal studies right now. There's a lot of work to be done between a successful animal study and a human study. There's a huge amount of regulatory stuff that has to go on. But people are really gearing up now to get through the FDA and get approval and treat. And that's entirely the idea, is to try and provide chemotherapy without side effects or to put in completely different therapeutics, because there are clever ways that you can persuade these nanoparticles to interact with cells in such a way that you might actually be able to specifically deliver molecules to the nucleus that would change gene activity. So that wouldn't be just drugs, but it would actually be changing what genes are turned on, what proteins are being made. So there's a lot of promise, and I think it's really not very far off.
It's not only for treatment, but also for diagnosis. So basically being able to identify whatever the illness is that you're looking at. For example, being able to identify cancer cells. Do they know yet? I mean, do you know yet what the markers are on cancer cells that can be identified by these little...
Diagnostics for diagnostic imaging are already here. There are various radioactive, usually, nanoparticles, which can be sent to tumor sites and light them up temporarily. These tend to be particles that are not long-lived in the animal or the person. They can be used for imaging, and then they can be excreted. So that for diagnostic imaging, we already have some nano-based imaging agents.
How widespread is that? Are we getting it when we go for our screenings and so on?
Not for screening, but for for diagnostics ahead of radiation therapy, for example, there's opportunity to use some of these radioactive particles to show exactly where you want to target your therapy.
Now, does any of this have applications to HIV and AIDS?
Well, certainly, because you can target cells that are, in fact, they're almost, infectious diseases are almost slightly easier targets. Not that I would suggest that AIDS is ever an easy target, but they typically, a cell that's infected with a virus is expressing foreign proteins on its surface, so that you can then target to that to those foreign proteins with really a lot of specificity. And a problem with many of the markers that we have on cancer cells is that they're mutated or overexpressed versions of proteins that are also on normal cells. So for infectious diseases, there's a lot of promise.
Janet Oliver is Regents Professor of Pathology at the University of New Mexico. She's the director of two interdisciplinary research centers which are sponsoring the event, The Art of Systems Biology and Nanoscience. Dr. Janet Oliver, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
I've enjoyed it. Thanks very much, Mary Charlotte.